So, before we hand the meeting over to today's panelists, we want to share a few updates with you. One of the big focuses for us at NA World Services currently is preparing for the first in-person World Service Conference in 5 years. The conference agenda report, or CART as we call it, is posted online at the conference webpage. That's www.na.org/conference. The CART contains information about the discussions and decisions that will happen during the conference week and is free to download. We're also busy creating PowerPoints and videos to help members with their local CAR workshops, and we'll post these as soon as they're ready. Along with the 25 motions and informational essays, the CAR contains a survey to help conference participants decide on priorities for literature projects and issue discussion topics in the next conference cycle. All members are encouraged to share their ideas for priorities, and that survey is posted at www.na.org/service. And we also wanted to let you know that we have been asked to try something new this year. The World Board always participates in zonal and other CAR workshops. This year, the board's participation will be virtual, and when the hosting region or zone has given permission, we will post the Zoom links for those workshops on the conference page. So I also want to remind everyone of the Fellowship's newest book, A Spiritual Principle a Day. It's available for sale from the NAW's web store at www.na.org/webstore for $13 plus shipping and handling. And we're offering this for free, free subscription to each day's reading on this page. So all you have to do is go to www.na.org/subscribe and you will receive a daily email. So for today's meeting, we have our six members to share their experience of sponsorship in Narcotics Anonymous with us. And as with previous webinars, we will post the audio recordings to the webinar archive page at www.na.org/webarchive sometime after today's meeting. We have again tried to select speakers to reflect the diversity we all benefit from in Narcotics Anonymous and are grateful to them all for their willingness to come and share with us. So, without further ado, I'm going to turn the meeting over to our wonderful speakers. First up, we actually have a NA member who is at his sponsee's 40-year clean anniversary celebration, and he may have to leave a little bit early after his share. So please don't think him rude. It is for a good cause. And I'm very happy to introduce Billy R from Arizona. Thank you, Billy.
Thank you. My name is Billy. I'm an addict. And I want to thank the NA World Services for the privilege to do this. Sponsorship, speaking at any meeting of Narcotics Anonymous is a privilege, but particularly on sponsorship, it really means a lot to me as well. So. Also, I want to thank everybody that's on this call. It never ceases to amaze me, even though I've been around here a long time, to see the diversity of fellowship that we have today from all around the world. And so I want to thank you all for being here and for sharing this journey with me. So sponsorship. It's an interesting topic, isn't it? It's simple, but it can get complicated for complicated people. And what I mean is that, my definition of sponsorship has changed, as is many things in my recovery over the years. There are certain things, though, that haven't changed regarding sponsorship. And that is to have a sponsor who has worked the steps. And is of service, in my estimation, again, what's beautiful about this program is that there's no one way. You know, just the way I sponsor somebody or the way I'm sponsored doesn't mean it's necessarily going to work for everyone else. So what I thought I would do is take you on a journey over this next 10 minutes and share with you some of the highlights of sponsorship, and not only of sponsors, but of sponsees, as it's said in the reading, because it is no question, it's a two-way street. So when I first came to the program, as a lot of us, in desperation, we had the gift. I had the gift of desperation on. Didn't realize that it was a gift at the time. I just thought that I was not going to be on the planet anymore. I didn't want to be here. When I walked through the doors at my first meeting, I was introduced to what was going to be my first sponsor. I didn't know at the time he was going to be my sponsor, but I knew that he had something about him, a confidence, an aura. He got respect from the other members. And the fellowship was much smaller then, so there wasn't a big pool of sponsors to choose from where I got clean. And so what I want to do is talk about, I've had four sponsors in 45 years. And I want to talk a little bit about what I've learned from each one of them. I also want to talk a bit about my sponsees. And as you can imagine, over 45 years, I've got a lot to talk about. But I wanted to synthesize it down to just a few things that really meant a lot to me in my heart. And so I will go ahead and do that. When I first came to the meeting, as I said, I saw who was going to be my sponsor. His name was Hank M. And the name means nothing to a lot of you people because you don't know him. But back in the day in Southern California, Hank M. and his brothers and sisters were kind of the pioneers in Narcotics Anonymous, particularly in the Southern California area. And so I remember when I asked Hank to sponsor me, I was reluctant because he, you know, when I was sick and if you didn't have the same clothes I had, if you didn't have the same tattoos I had, if you didn't use the same drugs I used or come from the same neighborhood, then I would judge you. Because that's what the disease of addiction wants to do. It wants to separate us from everybody and everything. Tragic separation is the separation of ourselves in our heart. And so what a sponsor did for me was he brought that, started to bring that together. I wanted to turn Hank into my father, who I never had. I wanted to turn Hank into the priest that I came from, my religion. I wanted him to be my big brother. I wanted him to be everything. And so what I got was a drug addict street guy that I related to in most part. And I'll tell you, if there was one word, and I know you'll understand this, we've been in the program for a while, even before that as a newcomer, and even as I stay clean, the one word that I think is so important for me in sponsorship is trust. And as you know, from where we come from, we don't trust no one, including ourselves. So when Hank, at a year and a half clean, I was struggling with my higher power, my concept of what God was. I was afraid that he was going to put his God on me. I thought that this was some type of, you know, how we go when we first come in. I thought this was some type of a religious sect or some kind of an organization that was going to take over me and tell me what to do. In a way, I wanted it. I didn't want to take responsibility for myself, man. You know, because drugs took responsibility for me until they stopped working. And then guess what? I had to grow up. And thankfully, I had a sponsor in Hank that knew that. So he was a tough old school sponsor. And when it came to working the second step and the third step, I balked. And here's what I learned from my first sponsor, Hank, that I take with me to this day. He says, Billy, look it. Listen to me. He goes, I understand you being afraid to look at this God. He goes, but you know, there's going to be many people on this road, this journey that you're on, that are going to tell you or suggest to you who your higher power should be. They're going to mean well, most of them. But he goes, what you have is that you have the freedom in Narcotics Anonymous to create your own higher power. And so he gave me the gift of, he said this, and I thought it was blasphemy, you know, because I had some old stuff going on. He says, here's the direction I want to give you. I want you to go back to the place you're staying. I was with 8 other addicts in a place down, kicking a habit and getting clean. And he goes, I want you to create, I want you to write what you would want in a higher power. And when he said that to me, I said, wow, man, I'm responsible. I said, why don't you give me your higher power? You know, jokingly, but I really kind of meant it. And he was starting to give me the tools of that, hey, you know what? We're not alone, but we can't do it for you. You know, we'll help you along the way. So I went and I wrote, and about a month later, 3 weeks later, I sat down and read what I wrote about how I wanted to create a higher power. And when I read it, he said to me after it was done, and it was, I got emotional. And he says, Billy, he goes, what you just did was you just wrote a love letter to yourself. And it's so true. It was so true. I created my own higher power, and it was really loving who Billy was. Has my higher power changed in many years? Sure. But one thing that has not changed, that I can take to the grave with me, is that love is real. And so, you know, love for me is where my higher power is. So anyway, that's what Hank, amongst many other things that he gave me. So during this time, when back in 1979, 78, I forget when we took the book out of the fellowship's book, the AA fellowship book out of our meetings, and we didn't replace it with the basic text right away. And Hank, God bless him, could not break away from that. And it, from the break where we were creating our own Narcotics Anonymous was coming to life. You know, Jimmy Kay was in our area, and Bob B and some other folks that were, you know, old timers. And so there was a separation. And I went with his brother, George. And it hurt him and it hurt me, but we still stayed friends until he's passed away now. The lesson that I learned from George, his brother, was pretty frustrating, you know? And what I mean is that George was so different, and we learned from our sponsors, right? And our sponsors change, and our sponsees change and morph. And so when I went to George, George would always say one thing. He would always bring whatever issue I had, he would bring it back to one thing, and that was forgiveness. So he would always say, Billy, forgive yourself, forgive them. And so I was frustrated one day, and this is what I got from him, that really it's the little things that we don't know at the time that can change our life. You know, they say a peak experience, right, is knowing it. The longer I'm clean, the quicker I'm able to learn that I'm in a peak experience, a learning that I need to pay attention. A lot of times I'll turn back after it's over with a week or two later and say, wow, that was pretty profound. Or a year later or 2 years later. You know, we put that in our spiritual bank, don't realize that it's going to surface and we're going to use it. And so I remember I was all jammed up, you know, with something. I wanted to, you know, I was really hurting, and that was into a lot of drama, I guess, you know. And I met with George, and George was always very peaceful and very zen-like. He was a beautiful man, a beautiful man. And so I told him all this stuff, and he looks at me, and I'm saying to myself, Billy, if he says forgive yourself and doesn't give me anything else, I'm going to go crazy right in front of him. And so I tell him slowly everything that's going on, and I'm hoping that he can see that I'm at my wit's end. And he says, and so I've stopped talking, and I wait for his response, and guess what he says to me? He says, Billy, you got to forgive yourself. And I said to him, I said, George, you see this butter knife? We were having lunch. I said, you see this butter knife that I have in my hand? I said, I want to push that right through my jugular vein, really slowly. And I said, that's how I feel. And he looked at me, and I'm saying to myself, now, how are you going to answer that one, Mr. Forgiveness? And he looked at me, and this is what has stuck with me. He says, Billy, if you do that, you're going to be killing the wrong person. It was a remarkable, remarkable shift in my thinking, because I had blamed myself. You know, we walk around with shame. We walk around with guilt. We walk around with anger, and we don't let it out in appropriate ways anyway. And what I've learned from my sponsors is that there's an appropriate way to be an adult and a human being than to, when somebody hurts my feelings, for me not to character assassinate them behind their back or want to get into a fist fight with the person. The more courageous thing is what I've learned is that you look at that person and say, hey, when you said that to me, it really hurt my feelings. And so it's the little things like that that I learned from George. George passed away, and I got a gentleman named Bobby R., a whole together different dude. He was he was my sponsee brother back in the 70s, and now he was my sponsor. As you probably have experienced, a lot of times when a sponsor dies, the sponsees, your sponsee brothers, either ask you to sponsor them or you ask them to sponsor you. See? Because I truly believe, and that's happened in my case, I truly believe that, as we said earlier in the writing, that sponsees help sponsees, man. Sponsees brothers help us out. And so when George died, I asked Bob, and Bobby was, what I learned from Bob, I'll say quickly because I know I'm kind of running out of time here. What I learned from Bob was serve us on a different level, more on the world level, for those of you who knew Bobby R. I also learned how to say no, because Bob had no problem saying no. He would say no even if he meant yes. You know, he was just that kind of guy. He was an old, tough, you know, get-her-done kind of guy. And so I had him for many, many years, 20 years, 22 years, and then he passed away. And now my current sponsor is a gentleman who I think a lot of you know, Tom M. From the islands in Hawaii. And so Tom and I have been together. I've known Tom for years, but he's been my sponsor now for, oh, I think about 14 years. So I'm blessed to have Tom and to have the folks in my life to help me walk through life's situations. So I want to share one of the gifts that I got. There's many, you know, as life shows up, as we know, life shows up. People are going to die. We're going to be hospitalized. We're going to have financial issues, all of life's issues. And I have a sponsor and sponsees to help me through those. And I've, trust me, I won't get into them, but as a lot of you, I've walked through many of those colors of life. And I've never done it alone. So I just want to end with this. So I got a phone call about 10 years ago from a woman who I didn't know. And she introduced herself, and she was the daughter of a sponsee of mine that I had sponsored years ago. And she had just gotten married. She wasn't an addict. She had just gotten married, and she was pregnant. And she wanted to know more about her father, about her dad. And so I said, sure. She goes, we want to fly into where you live. I live in Arizona. And can we buy you lunch? And I said, well, absolutely, I would love to. And so we were talking, and she asked me this question. And she asked me this. She goes, Billy, she goes, did my father ever say he loved me? She goes, did he ever say, talk about me? And I said to her, I said, honey, absolutely, he did. You know, I have to say, I might have poured it on a little bit strong, saying he absolutely talked about you often. So maybe that was a lie, but it was kind of the semi-truth. It was a beautiful moment, and it touched my heart so deeply. So I think I'm about out of time. I could go on and on, but I want to, again, thank the fellowship for holding this space and for being with each other and for having me here. And I just want to say this before I get off, that is, if there's anybody on this call right now that's jammed up, that's stuck between a rock and a hard place, that doesn't want to be on the planet anymore, that wants to use and they know they can't use, I'm here to say, welcome home. I'm here to say that this too will change, because I always thought, and my sponsor would always say, Billy, a feeling is not a fact. You've heard that. You know, because as soon as I caught a feeling, forget it. I was out getting loaded, or I was out having a temper tantrum, or I was out wanting to leave the planet and not be here. And today I can tell you, I love being here, even though life has shown up. So thanks again, all of you from around the world. And I'm looking forward to hearing the other speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. Awesome. So next, we're going to hear Grainne from Ireland. Grainne, could you please share for us?
Yeah. Hi, Tim. Hi, everyone. My name is Grainne and I'm an addict, and I normally speak super fast. So this is going to be a massive challenge for me to speak slow. So if I am speaking too quickly, please let me know. I have a lot to say on sponsorship, because it's probably, I'm so passionate about it, as I am with every part of Narcotics Anonymous and all it is to offer us as addicts in recovery. And I just get really pumped up about it. So thanks to Billy for sharing. It was really inspiring listening to him. He's 45 years clean. I'm actually 44 years old, and I'm about half his clean time, 25 years. I celebrated 25 this year. And I was like laughing to myself, because I said, oh God, Billy has had four sponsors in 45 years, and I've had three physical sponsors, real sponsors, and maybe one-ish, which I will speak about. So I'm like, God, I wonder how many people I'll go through in my lifetime of recovery. But I understand the time, so I'm going to time myself so I don't speak too long. So I came to Narcotics Anonymous when I was 19 years of age, and it wasn't part of my life plan. I didn't set out when I was 8 or 9, you know, as young people do, and they say, what would you like to be when you grow up? And drug addict was certainly not one of them. I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to be a nurse or something. But I ended up in Narcotics Anonymous, lost, crazy, unmanageable, it just was not the place I wanted to be. And one of the first things that I learned at my very first meeting was I needed to get in with this crowd. I didn't understand what was happening. Bit like Billy, I thought it was some religious cult. They had kind of captured me, or they were going to try and brainwash me. And But on the other side, I was like having this two kind of fold experience. There was something that drew me to what was happening. I had that gift of desperation. I had that want for things to change. I was willing to do whatever I needed to do in order to make that happen. So I came back to another meeting. And I came back to another meeting because that's what they told me to do. And as time went on, I listened and I heard what people were saying. And they were talking about this sponsor thing. So I thought, I better get me one of them. Because I kind of thought it was something you needed to stay in the fellowship, to stay part of the group or the gang, you know. So I asked a woman to sponsor me, and she said yes immediately, and I was relieved. And then I was like, well, that's it, it's done, I've ticked that box. And she said, here's my number, call me tomorrow and we'll make a plan. So my head went into overdrive, because now my disease was telling me, what did you do that for? Like, now you've nearly, you know, ratted on yourself, or you've kind of given away your trump card. And I felt she had me. It was like I felt I had handed over this power that I thought I had. And my head started telling me how to not make that phone call the next day, and how not to go to her house, and how not to start this work with her. So I spent about 24 hours trying to talk myself out of it. And a few minutes before I was due to call her, I called her. And that's where the journey, I suppose, started. So I used to go to her house, and we used to read through the books. Back then, there was no step working guide. But we did some work together. And, you know, it was all very dramatic. It was all about how to stay clean. It was all about how to manage my day-to-day kind of existence. I had to, as part of the deal, we made out a list of things I had to do every day. Very basic things like get up, eat fruit, wash your teeth, wash yourself. And then it progressed. I managed to do all those things without being prompted. And we started to look at other stuff. We started to work through the steps as best I could. And we developed a relationship that was amazing. And I believe that was one of the first, I suppose, proper relationships I had in recovery. And a lot of what I learned in that relationship, I would use in relationships I have today with people, not only in recovery, but with people in my life, in my family. And I'm forever grateful for that. Things started to move on. I started to, you know, I got 90 and 90 as one of the suggestions. And this woman knew me very well. So when I rocked up to her house full of ego and delight after getting my 90 and 90, she decided another 90 and 90 would be a super idea to knock the stuffing out of me. And that's what I did. So I wasn't so ego driven after the second 90 and 90. We did a lot of work together. I stayed with her for a number of years. And then I ended up moving to another city. And I think things had started to take over for me. Work, life, relationships, other relationships outside of NA were starting to distract me, and distract me in maybe a negative way, because I decided that NA could just slip down the list ever so slightly. So when I moved, we kind of lost that kind of intimacy and that closeness. And I chose to let it, I suppose, slip away. So my next sponsor is someone called Gráinne, which is myself. Not a good move. Not a good idea. Things went very bad and negative and unmanageable and crazy over a period of time. So that's the other sponsor that I talk about when I was not active in the program, but I was still clean. And as time went on, using started to creep up my list of options as to how to manage and how to cope. And luckily for me, I didn't quite get there. I managed to stay clean throughout that period of my life. I would not recommend sponsoring yourself ever, even momentarily. It can have very negative effects on you and those around you. So please do not do it. Do not try this at home. So different things had happened. There was a convention being held in the complex where my apartment was. And an old friend of mine who had introduced me to NA rang me. So I had some contacts still in NA who used to ring me and ask me, had I been to a meeting lately? And there was always a really good excuse as to why I hadn't been to one recently. And she rang me this day and said, oh, you'll never guess where the next convention is. And I was like, oh, where? And she said, it's in your complex. And I was like, you're fucking kidding me. Oh, my God. I just automatically felt as if I had been backed into a corner. And I couldn't get out. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I went to that convention under duress and I reconnected with some people. Something happened, a spiritual awakening, whatever you want to call it. For me, it was definitely more than a spiritual awakening. It was a life-saving moment. And I ended up coming back to NA and getting fully involved, got myself a sponsor, started working the steps. Going through the book, got really involved in service. And luckily, you know, I managed to get myself on track and, as they say, acknowledged, got my shit together and I'm here to tell the tale. So I now have changed sponsors maybe about 8 years ago, maybe 6 years. I'm working with someone else now, just through different situation. Nothing kind of bad or major happened. And when I came back to NA that time, I started working with others. I suppose what I had seemed to attract other people. And a couple of girls asked me to sponsor them. And it's just been amazing, that relationship. You know, talking about sponsorship, it's very important that I talk about, you know, my relationship with my sponsor, but also equally, as Billy pointed out, the relationship with my sponsees is just as important for me. So for me, I do the same as what my sponsor does with me. You know, I meet them regularly. We hook up, we talk. I believe in them. I want what's best for them no more than my sponsor wants what's best for me. We're not best buddies or anything. Most of my sponsees, you know, I'm just there to help. Guide, talk, be a sounding board. Like at the start, the relationship is the same. It's all about how to stay clean, you know, just the drama, how to kind of manage yourself in that drama and getting to meetings, you know, connecting with other people. There might be a bit of family stuff, relationship stuff, all of which I have experience with. I'm not a relationship counselor, but I've been in a relationship for quite some time. So, you know, obviously there's an attraction there for my sponsees to want what maybe I have to offer. You know, I meet up, we meet up on a regular basis and yeah, that's the deal. You know, there's nothing I suppose complicated about it. But we can unfortunately turn it into this complicated relationship. As I said, I literally just text my sponsor today and we're meeting up next week just for a catch up before Christmas. I met a couple of my sponsees last week. I went to one's house for dinner with her and her partner, and it was lovely. I brought my wife with me. You know, it's just an amazing relationship to have. I'm forever grateful to anyone who has kind of passed in and out of my recovery. There's a few people on here that I recognize. There's a few that I don't, but I just feel that connection with everyone. You know, anyone I meet who's a newcomer at a meeting, I actively encourage them to get a sponsor. It works for me. It works for countless others. So why not give it a try? If you're, I suppose, a bit like me, where you're in between, or you have been in between sponsors, or at that place maybe where you're starting to kind of slip away and get on that slippery slope, you know, just do something different, you know, just reach out and certainly stay within the fold of Narcotics Anonymous. I think I have said enough. Again, I would talk forever on this subject. I love it so much. It's an integral part of my recovery. And I'm just glad to be in NA today, just to tell the tale. So thank you, everyone. And thanks to Anna's for organizing this, and also for inviting me to share. I really appreciate it. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Grainne. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. Next, we have Marla from Illinois to share with us. Marla, please.
So first of all, thank you to World Services for the invitation. It's, as everyone has said, it's an honor and very humbling to be asked to share at any time, much less at this level. This came, I don't know, sort of at a, as recovery often works, a very coincidental time in my recovery. I'm coming up in a couple of months on my 30-year anniversary. So of course, that often, you know, as anniversaries do, promotes a lot of thought and reflection and, you know, and that kind of thing. My current sponsor is 95 years old and has moved to Florida to be with her family. So I know she will always be there for me, but I also understand that this is a end of life, you know, for her to be with her children and siblings. So I've chosen to start looking for a new sponsor. And for the area that I'm in, women with significant time is rare, you know, so that's why this is, you know, opportune. I started my recovery through a gay AA meeting. I started, that's just where I started. And I did that because I was told it would be safe. And at the time, that was significant. Also, I was not comfortable with my own sexuality, so that added to the safety of the situation. For me, my first sponsor was somebody that obviously wasn't, being gay wasn't an issue. And so it was also a role model of somebody who was comfortable in their sexuality, which helped. She was absolutely wonderful with teaching me the steps and took me through the steps my first time, and did a great job of guiding me and helping me understand how the steps worked as a whole. I switched over to Narcotics Anonymous as my recovery grew and knowledge of my own use and so on grew. My next sponsor, I only had for about 6 months, and that was due to her own issues. And then I got the sponsor I currently have. So she's been my sponsor for 26 years. So I thought I would share about, you know, kind of as I'm reflecting now on what I want in sponsorship today and what it means to be, just on how sponsorship has grown for me on both sides over my almost 30 years. At first, you know, it was guidance. It was that first primary relationship When I got into recovery, I was very isolated. I was very antisocial, very shy, very just introverted. And so that one point person was kind of my entryway into recovery and fellowship and learning how to like people again, and interact with people. And like I said, took me through the steps. With the sponsor I have now, we began to work specific issues through the steps. Codependency, that, so it really added depth to my recovery. I first became a sponsor. I don't think that happened until Narcotics Anonymous. And that added a whole nother dimension to my recovery. As I would take a sponsee through the steps, I would read the steps over again. And as we all know, things get added to the literature all the time because you don't see it the first time through. And as my recovery grew, so did my knowledge and my experience. And it was like kind of redoing the step all over again with sponsees. And inevitably, sponsees would, you know, educate me on the steps. They would always, you know, have something that I would think, why didn't I know that? You know, that's when it really became this, you know, deep two-way street of me guiding and then them guiding me as well. One of the things that I really remember from my first sponsor was being told that the steps, there's three different sections. The first three get you clean. The last three keep you clean. And the middle six determine the quality of that clean time. So what you put into recovery is what you're going to get out. So you can work through the steps once and decide you're good, you're done, and that's it. But it's very limiting. And I was fortunate that the sponsor I have now believed in continuing to work on yourself, continuing to use the steps in everyday life. And she's been a beautiful example of that. So I was taught you always check in, you meet regularly. As my recovery went on and I became more capable of living life on life's terms, it became less about needing her and more about wanting her in my life to help me improve that quality of my recovery. And that's what we did for the longest time. Anything new, anything different, I would check in, we would process. And one great gift that I noticed over time was that she began to do the same with me. So our recovery started to mesh, and that was just part of that two-way street. But as we both grew and matured, that became a wonderful aspect of recovery. When I look at what I'm looking for now in a sponsor and thinking back of everything they've meant to me, it's changed over the years. As my recovery has grown and developed and matured, I hope matured, trying to decide what I want, I guess I haven't yet. And I suppose that in a way that's a blessing in and of itself. I love what my current sponsor is doing. It's what's right for her. And that in and of itself is modeling what this recovery is about, that she has made this decision to move, to be with her family. That is what, I don't know, that's what we do in recovery. That's what you want, is to be able to make those decisions for ourselves and do what's best for ourselves. So that's where I'm at with that. Over the years, I guess, the being a sponsor for other people early on, was a kind of a nervous kind of process. I think I had just a couple years when somebody first asked me, and it was intimidating. It was intimidating to have another person say, will you please guide me in this? You know, I wasn't anywhere near over my own insecurities and, you know, self-loathing and all of that. So it seemed like a very daunting task to be asked to do that. And that sponsor or sponsee didn't actually last very long and disappeared. And that also became significant. What did I do? What didn't I do? What could I have done better? You know, and as my recovery has changed and matured, so has that. I have become much more humble as a sponsor, I think. It's taught me a lot of humility. It's a very great example of what little power we actually have over other human beings. I've had sponsees succeed. I've had sponsees that I thought our relationship was really good. And then they've called and said, I'm going somewhere else. And learning to not allow my ego to get involved in that, you know, has been a process in and of itself, that they are doing exactly what they need to do for their recovery. And that's what they're supposed to do. So learning how to step back and let go of that and not take it personal or get hurt, all that kind of stuff, and just trust that they're doing what they need to do. That's what they're supposed to do. That relationship with sponsees over the years has taught me so much about interpersonal relationships, not just with my sponsor, but with sponsees, my impact on other people. Having sponsees come back and say I hurt their feelings or they didn't like something I said or, you know, anything like that. And to learn how to discuss that and reconcile it has been very significant with, you know, how I've grown as a person, how I've grown in my interpersonal relationships, whether those are friendships or more intimate relationships, dealing with my parents, learning how to let go. So the sponsor-sponsee relationship really has been very core to my recovery and very significant in my development in every area of my life. As I've gotten older, it's even translated into my work. And when, you know, younger people come in learning how to be an effective leader, an effective supervisor, an effective mentor. And so I've taken that relationship from recovery and put it into work, which also helps to, I don't know, increase satisfaction in my job, which is just another gift of recovery, of how we take it and add it and move it into our own lives. I guess a couple other things I was thinking about. One thing is I always emphasize to my sponsees to build the family. So I now have, you know, grand sponsees and great grand sponsees and great great grand sponsees, which is beautiful that younger people are finding this. Not beautiful that they need it, but beautiful that they're coming in, and encourage them to connect with different parts of our family, because families grow, recovery families grow, and have a tendency to have the same attitudes about recovery and interpret it the same way. And that can be a beautiful bond when you know that not only do I have this sponsor, but I also have all these other people through the family who also are going to think in the same way and help in the same way. And that just builds that support system. One last thing I wanted to share. I think I would be remiss as a sponsor if I did not acknowledge, and I think she's on here somewhere, my sponsee Roxanne G from the area is celebrating 24 years clean today. So, and she very lovingly texted and said that being on here today and listening to me share was, you know, her gift for her recovery, which can't talk about that too much because I'll cry. And that's just part of the beauty of all of this. So I appreciate the invitation today. And I'm very moved by everybody that showed up today to listen to all of us. So thank you.
Thank you, Marla. Again, we appreciate you. That's awesome. Thank you. Now we're going to hear from Chrissy in Australia. Over to you, Chrissy.
Thanks, Timmy. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Fantastic. Thank you. My name's Chris. I'm a recovering addict. I live in a place called Logan City in Australia. And thank you very much for inviting me to share today. I have to admit that I just couldn't understand why they would ask me to speak on sponsorship. But hey, you know, like it takes all kinds. And I came into Narcotics Anonymous when it first opened in Queensland, in Australia, around 1984. I got clean in 1986. And pardon me, like the others that have shared today, I'll quickly run down memory lane with my sponsors. And I've had six, and I'm 36 years clean. And I remember I came into Narcotics Anonymous because there was, I'm going to try and slow down and remind myself that with interpreters, it's like police giving evidence in court. And so that'll give you an insight into my background. And there wasn't anything else that I had tried that worked for me. And out of desperation, I did come into Narcotics Anonymous. And I have to say that I relapsed for 2 years before I actually was able to stay clean. And getting a sponsor was probably the most significant step that I took to helping me to not only stop using, but stay stopped. My first sponsor was a male. He and his wife were like the older members of Narcotics Anonymous in Brisbane because they had about 3 years clean. And and I really couldn't relate to his wife. I was a second generation sex industry worker and I ran brothels in Queensland. And she just looked to me like she was somebody that was about to enter the nunnery. But I liked her husband in the sense that he'd been around, he worked with guys in jail, and I knew that he was familiar with the subculture that I lived in. I still continued to run my businesses for the first 9 years of my recovery before I felt comfortable enough and had enough faith in myself and a higher power to move out of that industry. And though my mother never did. And she ran places till she dropped dead. And but that's another story. And so I chose this guy and he was very good for me. He totally understood the subculture that I lived in. And I ended up moving on from him because I felt like I was a single mum and a parent. And I felt like sometimes I just felt like there was something missing when it came to that parenting stuff, you know, because so often in recovery as a parent and a single parent, we have to put children's needs before our own. And it comes with a myriad of different challenges. So anyhow, I moved on and I found a lovely woman down the coast, down the Gold Coast in Queensland, who was also a single mum. Also around that time, there'd been a big upheaval in the local fellowship and my sponsor and his wife had returned to a previous 12-step fellowship that they came from. And so we muddled along in Queensland to get NA going. And because I did a meeting every day for the first 2 years of my recovery, we had to open meetings. We had to open meetings in Narcotics Anonymous for addicts, you know. And I stayed with her, you know. She was a lovely woman. I found her extremely helpful. And I stayed with her for a while, and she relapsed, you know. And I thought, oh, goodness, what shall I do here? And so I found another guy down the coast again. And I think what attracted me to that relationship, and I don't mean it, there was absolutely no smuttiness about it. He was like a big brother. And I think what attracted me was he had a very live and let live attitude. And even though he ended up relapsing after, I don't know, a few years, we remained friends right up until, you know, he came back into recovery later, and we remained friends right up until he passed away. And then I was rudderless. You know, I often see my recovery journey as being uncharted waters, you know, like I'm in this boat and I have no idea what's ahead. You know, I know where I've been and I know what to do, because I've been around for so long and I've had to do it. But I felt like I was in uncharted waters without a sponsor. And you know, I believe in divine intervention, and I was going to college at that time. I'd left the industry, and I was studying, and I met a woman who was in another 12-step program in college. And so we organised a little meeting, and she ended up being my sponsor. She ended up passing away. She had cancer in her liver, and just before she passed away, I found somebody online. I used to do email meetings because there wasn't any Zoom. I know, it's almost like, you know, I've been around since Jesus was in knickerbockers, but I found a guy online to work with me, and I remember talking to her about it before she died, and she said, "Oh, gee," she said, "I wouldn't mind one of those old yanks, you know, to help me, you know." And I had quite a good rapport, and I found it very supportive. And similar to what one of the other speakers noted, is that there just wasn't a lot of women around with time up in Narcotics Anonymous in Queensland. And I was sort of the old matriarch even at that stage, you know, and I wasn't as old then as I am now. And somehow or other, that relationship, just that sponsor, that overseas thing, just stopped working. It was very difficult. And I remember hearing a woman share that was so dissimilar to me as a person. You know, this woman had grown up with a mother and a father and a normal sort, almost normal, you know, dysfunctional, I guess we all are to a degree. But she'd had a very nice background, and she was educated, and she was genteel, and I didn't feel like I was any of those things, but there was something about her I liked, and I think I really got a sense of her being very kind. And because the world had been not kind to me from when I was a child onwards, you know, I guess I respond to kindness. You know, I'm an incredibly loyal person, and if you're kind to me, even if you turn out to be, and I'm not swearing, Timmy, a mongrel, the four-letter words haven't come out yet, and I will be loyal, you know. And so I was attracted to her kindness, and that was probably 20 or 25 years ago or something like that. And she's still my sponsor today. And everything I go to her with, just about, she'll always take it back to the steps. But the one thing that she's taught me above all else is to just be kind to myself. You know, just be kind to yourself, Chris, you know. I guess throughout my years in NA, I've always done a lot of service, and service dominated a lot of my recovery. And a few years ago, I moved from Logan City, which is a bit of a rough place, Logan. And we've got a reputation in Queensland. And I guess if you can survive in Logan, you can probably survive anywhere. And I moved to the Gold Coast. And then I went down there, and while I was there, I got three or four people over a period of time that asked, women that asked me to sponsor them. And I did. And I usually I ask people, what do you expect from sponsorship? What sort of a time commitment do you expect? What do you want from me? You know, and I'll see if I can do that, you know. And I've had all sorts of answers. So COVID struck and I missed my family, and I wanted to move back to up near Brisbane in Queensland, away from the Gold Coast. And how it worked out was, out of the four women that I sponsored down the Gold Coast, I was able to take three of them through the whole 12 steps while I was down there in the 3 years I was at the Gold Coast. And so I really felt like it was worthwhile, and I moved back to Queensland, and I've picked up, a local girl here and there to sponsor, and I just, I guess I just do what my sponsor does. I guess I just try and encourage people to run their own race, rely on the program, rely on the steps, do lots of meetings, do some service, use me as much as they want to. And recently I've been through a crisis and I haven't felt as emotionally available as what I have at times. And one of my little sponsees, who I think is on today, said to me, oh, well, I haven't stopped contacting you because I think it'll get you off yourself if I ring you. And she's so right. She's so right. And so, you know, to walk with people and to be able to, all I have to really share with them is my experience in Narcotics Anonymous, and occasionally my strength and always my hope. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much. Thank you for asking me to share, Jimmy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chrissy. Thank you. Next we have Lewis from Puerto Rico to share with us.
Hi, hello everyone. I'm Lewis. I'm an addict. I'm truly honored to be here, to be asked to speak on my favorite topic, sponsorship. I came to NA after my life became a mess. I didn't know what to do with my life. And eventually I got to NA. And one of the first things I heard was about getting a sponsor. And it took me like 3 or 4 months to find a sponsor. And when I asked this man, I felt weird. It was like the feeling that I experienced asking him was the same feeling that I had experienced when I first asked a girlfriend to be my girlfriend. I was nervous, I was unsure, I was afraid of rejection. But eventually I overcame all those feelings and I asked. And he said yes, and he started guiding me through the steps, through the program of Narcotics Anonymous. He showed me what service was. He was very much involved in service, the way around NA. And I'm very grateful for that. You know, I learned to love the fellowship and the process. And if anything I've learned about sponsorship, it is the backbone of the program of Narcotics Anonymous. It helps me see things I don't see myself, and someone I can trust with issues that I'm not ready to put it out there in a meeting, in a regular meeting, or to share it with anybody else. So I have someone that I can trust with my deepest secrets. And it was particularly important for me to have a sponsor while working my fourth and fifth step. He helped me a great deal. So this first sponsor was with me for about 8-9 years, because I first came around and I was lying to everyone about my clean time. And it took me like a year and a half to really stop using drugs, all of them, and to work the program clean. So after I decided to stay clean, I was able to stop and get clean and work the program. He stayed with me for about 7 years. So he showed me, guided me through the steps. He gave me this ear for me to share my secrets. And I developed a great relationship with him. I have to say, the truth is that it was exactly what I needed at the time. Eventually, I moved back to Puerto Rico. I'm joining in from Carolina in Puerto Rico. And I looked for a sponsor locally. I got the second sponsor. That relationship didn't last too long. We didn't connect. So I moved on to the next sponsor. And I stayed with this sponsor for about 2 or 3 years. And after that, I moved on to another sponsor. I found someone who really helped me a great deal. And I stayed with him until he died. By the time he died, after he died, I didn't know what to do. So you say, wow, what do I do now? Finding someone like him is going to be difficult. And it's funny, at the time, a copy of the magazine, DNA Way, came out, and they republished an article that they had published like 20 years before and mentioned about what to do when your sponsor dies. I said, wow. And I started reading. The first thing I said, well, given 30 days, you know, it's a mourning period. And after that, look for someone else totally different. Don't try to look someone like him, because you're not going to find it. And that gave me light. That's why I was having such a hard time to find a new sponsor, because I was looking for someone exactly like him. And I moved on. And I brought me to my fifth and last sponsor, the one that's currently sponsoring me. And it's been a journey. This guy has been on the program. He'll be celebrating 36 years clean next week. And he's been sponsoring me for like probably 12, 15 years. And I have to say, I don't know what I would do without a sponsor, because I'm egocentric, right? And I looked up the meaning of egocentric. It says someone who is limited in outlook or concern to his or her own activities or needs. Sometimes I don't even know what I need. I think I need something and I don't. And when I filter my thoughts, my sick thinking, filtered through my sponsor, he always gives me a different perspective. Most of the time, give me a suggestion or two and helps me to go through the situation that I'm putting out there, and the results are better. Recently, I had this situation with a sponsee, and I was about to ask the sponsee, look, I cannot sponsor you any longer, get yourself another sponsor. But thank God I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And thank God that I called and asked him what to do on that regard. Not what to do, but I explained what was the situation. And he listened like he always does. He listened to what I had to say. And at the end, when I stopped talking, he said, you know what, Lou? Don't let him go. Just stay there, be available, because obviously this person has a problem trusting people. And asking you to be his sponsor must have been very difficult. So let him make that decision whether he wants to keep you or not. But don't end their relationship. You just be there, make yourself available, and whenever he's ready, he'll come back and continue on with the work. That was enlightening, because for me, sponsorship is one addict helping another. It's a two-way street. And I have to learn to meet my sponsees where they are, not where I would like them to be. My experience with sponsorship has been great. Again, if I am left to my own devices, I will sabotage everything and anything. And I have to say, I've had a very successful career in Narcotics Anonymous. I've been clean for 27 years, 6 months, and 6 days. And each and every day is a blessing. I am learning to bit my tongue, and that's very difficult sometimes, to bite my own tongue. And the sponsor allows me the space, the opportunity to talk, to express myself without judging, without censorship. It's a great thing for me to have available. Ever since I got clean, my life has evolved. And whenever a situation presents itself, I have this tool to come to someone and ask for direction. See, the drugs took me to a state of humiliation. And the program of Narcotics Anonymous is bringing me to a state of humility. Asking someone to guide me in this process is an act of humility. Guiding someone in this process is also an act of humility. But being the egocentric individual that I am, I have to keep my ego in check, because I don't know everything. I will never know everything. I don't have all the answers. And the sponsor, my sponsor, not only helps me in my process, but it helps me guide someone else. Because sometimes I don't know what to do. I don't have the experience needed to guide the person in that part, in a particular situation. But when that happens, I can always go knock the door and ask for guidance. And if he doesn't know, if he doesn't have an answer, he goes to his sponsor. And it's a chain of support. It's a great support system that we have developed here in Narcotics Anonymous. I am truly honored to be part of this fellowship. I am grateful. I know that this disease is incurable, is progressive, and maybe lethal. I can see it every day. And yet, I was able to stop using and to put some principles in practice. The 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous are effective. They work. Every time I work them, they bring me results, good results, positive results. And like the speakers that preceded me, I have a lot to say about sponsorship, because like I said, I have had sponsor all the way, all along the journey, and I have had countless of sponsees along the way. And some of them still around, some others chose to go use. Some others just left the fellowship. I don't know what they're doing right now. But the bottom line is that we don't do this alone. This cannot be done alone. I need help, and I need to help someone. See, that keeps me in the middle of my process and doesn't allow me to wander off course. This is a process that begins and has no end. Well, I've been given the sign to end. but we continue growing. I continue growing day by day. And with the help of someone else, it's a lot easier. I avoid the pitfalls of recovery, the pitfalls of life itself, because I don't have all the answers. And even if I do, sometimes I fail to see them. And when I share that with another person, gives me a different perspective and allows me to to be to become a better person. I thank NA World Services for inviting me to speak, and I thank the 100 plus that join in. That's what makes recovery possible. Together, we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Lewis. We're very grateful for you. Thanks, Ozzy. For our final speaker today, we have Arnold, all the way from Southern California. Over to you, Arnold.
Thank you so much. My name is Arnold, and I'm an addict. I'm a grateful recovering addict. I want to start crying. I want to say I'm grateful to my sponsees who've showed up and to support me, John and Kyle and Mark, and I don't even know who else is here, but my guys are the best. I've got some of the best sponsees on the planet. We meet monthly, and Eric is here. Yay. Eric better be here. We meet monthly, and we do a Zoom once a month so that we can check in with one another, because we are a family. And my sponsee family keeps me grounded. Just like Luis was saying, the stuff that I go through, I bring to the sponsee family, and they sometimes, many times, help me as much as a sponsor does. My sponsor is maybe still here. Billy Ryan is my sponsor. Billy R. Cambria says no, okay. And he has been monumental in my shifts and changes. Charlie's here. Hey, Charlie. My sponsee Charlie's here. I got 15 guys, y'all. Billy's been responsible for helping me through a lot of the shifts and changes that I've had to make in the last year or so. And without him, I don't know if I could have, weathered some of these storms. My big shift was, changing one career and moving into another one. And this new career has me on the battlefield, you know what I mean? And I am faced with the reality of the disease of addiction, really raw, really face-to-face, really current, I kind of know what's out there. I know how people are using. I know how people are dying. I watch people try to manipulate and find their way into a diseased behavior. Thank you, Billy. He's made me become a member of the American Interventionist Association Society. And I didn't see any of this coming. My life for the last 50 years has been in music, entertainment, recording, and stuff that was very, very different. And recovery was my place to go and get, my solace. It was the place I would come for. It was my safe space, And I was afraid when I first got clean to even share what I did for a living. I didn't want to sound like I was doing something more than anyone else. And as if fuck that, I got to talk about my life. This is what I need to do. So Billy has been really influential in that way as well. My prior sponsor to Billy, Billy and Craig were both sponsored by Bob Lemoyne, who passed, not Bob Lemoyne, Barrett. Bob Raymar. I get the last names all messed up. Raymar, let you know that I've got some history in Narcotics Anonymous. I know all the Bobs. And Raymar was sponsoring Craig and Billy. And when Craig died, Craig was my sponsor at the time he died. Craig P.W., Mariash's husband. So I got lineage in this fellowship, and it freaks me out sometimes that, you know, I have lived long enough to have the memories of all the Bobs that have gone before me, you know. And I remember at Raymar's memorial, Mariasha and Abdul Hamid and I were together, and we were in a hallway, and that's when I realized I gave Billy a hug, and I just started weeping for no reason. Well, the reason was I spiritually connected with him, and it was beyond imaginable. I love this man so very much, as I did love Craig as well. And prior to Craig, my first Narcotics Anonymous sponsor was a guy named Sam Potter, who was just hardcore, Narcotics Anonymous, worked at Cry Help in the Valley, and had me, and I had all his sponsees, because he worked at the Bingo Hall out in Lancashire. He had all of his sponsees go out there and sell pull tabs to the people out there doing bingo. So we'd sell pull tabs and sell daubers to the, you know, little old men and little old ladies out there. And not always little and old, but sometimes big and young. But we would sell stuff to these people as a service thing, a service commitment. Early on, this was one of my early service commitments, was to work the bingo hall on a Saturday afternoon, just give up my Saturday for in a service. My first sponsor was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard him speak at an Alano club in 1984, I heard him speak at an Alano club, and I heard him share about being married and having two children, being divorced, and now married to a man. And he was a professor at Pierce College. And, you know, he had all this natural humanity that I thought was just so beautiful, that he moved through his sexual thing seamlessly and without any apology, and just very comfortable in his being, which was something that I found extremely attractive, because being comfortable as a Black man, as a gay man, as a man who's, you know, HIV positive in recovery, all this stuff was a little much to have to deal with. And I saw him completely, you know, tits out, showing it, saying, yeah, this is who I am. And I loved him for that. And so I wanted him as my sponsor. He was my first sponsor. He died a year later. And that's when I, at 9 months clean, I found Narcotics Anonymous. I went to a men's candlelight. It was a beautiful gay men's meeting. There was just a candlelight meeting. And it was at a time when a lot of our friends and fellows were dying, and we were just being as supportive as possible. And so sponsorship has been, you know, just this interesting thread of having someone who can show you how to live, and then having them pass away and finding someone else who can show you how to live, and then having them pass away and move on, and then finding someone else who showed me how to live, having them pass away and move on. And this passage of humanity and time and space, it's just seamless, you know? It's been beautiful, it's been enriching, and it is without a doubt, as Luis was saying, it's the backbone. But the opening page of the sponsorship book says, sponsorship is the heartbeat of our recovery. And Craig was actually on the committee when they were writing this book, not our best work apparently, but Craig was on the committee when they were writing this book, and he brought manuscripts, pieces, and he put them in. Okay, this is a funny story. Craig put the paper in plastic things, you know, little plastic sleeves, and he took us out on a canoeing trip. This was a Craig Perman Wiseman-ism. He took us out on a canoeing trip in San, I guess, in wherever near where he lived, Santa Monica. And there were five, six, seven of us. And, you know, I'm not a great swimmer. And there was a couple of guys who were not great swimmers. So we had our life jackets on. And, you know, me and Anthony, I think his name was, or Arthur or something, were in a boat together, and we started to sink. So they got us up. Oh, no, I need a full minute for this story. They got us up. They got us back, you know, in the boat, and we settled down on a little rock where he took us, and we went through this sponsorship book. We started reading pages from the sponsorship book because it was new material, and he wanted to present it to us. And then we paddled back in, you know, it's just, oh, Craig, such odd. He would do moonlight walks with us. And it, like, really intense hikes way up to on these cliffs, and all the only light you had was the moonlight of Santa Monica. It was beautiful and completely frightening, but that was life with Craig Perman Wiseman. Life with Billy Ryan is bliss. Life with Al Redinger was amazing. Sam Potter, and life with my sponsees today is a blessing for me. I don't know how I'd live without these guys. They just, like I said, keep me afloat for the guy who doesn't know how to swim. And that's the title of my memoir. I'm saying it out loud. Never learned to swim. All right. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Arnold. Awesome. And a huge thank you to all our speakers today. What a great meeting, and what a privilege to be a part of. A huge thank you. We are at the end. I just want this meeting to keep going. We actually ran over time, but I'm not apologising. That was awesome. Yeah, thanks, everyone. And a huge thank you to our translators. You just always do an awesome job. It's such a difficult, it's a hard service role, and we just appreciate you so much. So thank you. And, of course, to our wonderful staff at NAWS for putting all this together and just laying it out for us. So thank you so much. And everyone for coming. Thank you. Happy Sponsorship Day. Thanks for being a part of the webinar. We look forward to seeing you at our next webinar. And Arnold, are you still there? Would you mind leading us out with the third step prayer, please, if you're still?
Gladly.
Thank you. Take it away, Arnold. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Let's have a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers. Many of us have said,
God, take my will and my
recovery.
Thanks so much, everyone.